Live from the WSBA TV podcast studio, welcome to our latest edition of the G-Race podcast.
And now, introducing the lovely Big O.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the one and only G-Race. G-Racers, thank you for tuning in. It's your girl, lovely Big O, and I am here today with one of my other favorite people of all times. Yes, it is. Nobody better than George Singleton. Well, I call him Mr. George because, you know, that's respect. That's what we're supposed to do. So, yeah. Mr. George, I am so glad that you're here with us today and so excited to share exactly why you are here. Now, what most people don't know, Mr. George, what you're going to tell us about is that you used to throw them up in the air, right? Yes, and we ain't talking about throw no bowls. We talking about throw the hoops in the air. Tell us a little bit about you, Mr. George.
Well, first of all, thank you for this opportunity just to be here. I mean, anytime I have an opportunity to talk to people about my life, and especially someone like yourself that I've gotten to know over the past several months, it's been very gratifying, and kudos to you.
Congratulations. Thank you. Now, Mr. George, don't get me to start blushing over here now. You already got that good old Easter suit on you, too. Oh, you're looking mighty sharp over there.
Thank you. I tried to dress up for you a little bit.
I love it.
Interesting enough, you can't tell by my stature, but I'm 6'8", or at least I was. As you get older, you get short. You know, you get a little shorter. I was regarded growing up as a sleeper. Meaning, from a basketball standpoint, a lot of people didn't know about you. You just wasn't really on the radar for a lot of recruiters. Mm. And interesting enough, my freshman year in high school, I didn't play. And I was dating a young lady that her father was a head football coach. Mm. So he told me, he said, young man, if you want to keep dating my daughter, you better try out for the basketball team. You got all this hype, and it's going to go to waste. Wow. So I did. I tried out and made the team. And interesting enough, was pretty good at it. I had past tense, like developed a 38-inch vertical, just really enjoyed playing. And so it just gave me some identity. It gave me an opportunity to sports does a lot for a lot of people in a lot of ways. I mean, it really does. It opened up so many opportunities for me that only God knew. He had a plan for
Listen.
Me all along, truly. And we ended up winning the state. And from there, I got a lot of considerations, had about 10 or 12 scholarship offers, but I had a lot of people.
Okay, Mr. George, that daddy saying you gonna play this ball or not date my daughter worked, didn't it?
I was kind of becoming into my own then, because I could see. I said, you know, this
might be it.
This could work for me. I said, Lord, what you got planned for me?
So did you go off to school?
Well, I did. I ended up going. My three choices was Furman University, East Tennessee State, and East Carolina.
Okay.
And the coach at East Carolina, Eddie Payne, he's passed away. But he saw me before anyone did. And he absolutely loved me playing. And he said, you know, it's going to be hard to keep you a secret. He kept telling me that. And when it was all said and done, I ended up choosing Furman because it was a little closer to home. You know, East Carolina.
We like the Furman Paladins.
Yeah, East Carolina is in Greenville, North Carolina. But I just fell in love with the purple and white. And just, you know, really liked the city and everything. And I remember Coach Payne telling me, he says, you know, you're the only man that really made me cry. He says, that was, you know.
You broke his heart.
I broke his heart. I really did. And we would see each other throughout the years. And, you know, God bless his soul. May he rest in perfect peace. He was just a great guy. But anyway, went on to Furman and spent 4 years there. We had some moderate success, but we weren't anything to, you know, break any record books.
But at least you got there.
Yeah, personally.
Because I was going to say everybody don't even get a chance to get a scholarship. Were you there on a scholarship?
Well, you know, like I said, and we've been talking, you know, God had a plan for me. Uh-huh. And so 4 years at Furman, my senior year, we lost in the second round of the conference tournament. I was in the gym. Miss O just in there, and my then head coach came up to me and said, what do you want to do? I said, Coach, I'd love to continue to play.
Mm.
You know, just every young man's dream who's been involved in the game, and it's just been so good for me. And he said, let me make some calls. So he made a couple of calls and talked to some folks. I ended up being invited to a pretty prestigious camp. Well, we won that tournament, and I was like third in the voting for MVP. So I began to get the attention of the NBA. And I was like,
oh, the NBA, the National Basketball Association?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So,
all right.
You know, after that tournament, I was invited to another tournament. And when that, I didn't do so well there because that was some pretty top-notch talent there. But then one of the scouts from the Los Angeles Lakers came up afterwards and said, you're going to be our second pick for the Los Angeles Lakers. And I was like, what?
Oh, now that's on time right now.
Now, this was during Showtime with Magic and Kareem. All the, you know, Paula Abdul was a cheerleader. And, it, you know, it was all those things out there.
Not just Paula.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the Eddie Murphy, all that. So I was their second pick. Last player picked in the third round, but I was the second pick. And I spent the better part of a summer with them, mm-hmm. playing with them. But to be honest with you, Ms. O, chances of making that team is about as, you know, I don't know. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. They were just so talented. But I was able to continue my talent and my skills to where I spent the next 11 years playing in Europe. I spent 7 years playing professionally in Europe and Spain.
What was the team?
Oh, my goodness. The first team was Valladolid, which is Spanish. At one time, it was the capital of Spain. Madrid's the capital now, but Valladolid, we're talking centuries ago. That was one. Then I played, gosh, I went to Italy for 3 years. So I played with three separate teams in Italy. You know, wherever the money was, I was going.
You had already said.
I wasn't going to sit around and wait. And then I came back to Spain and played for 4 years with a team right outside of Barcelona. And I also spent another 1 year playing in Galicia up in Lugo. So I was single. I packed my bags wherever the money was. I was going in the situation.
And it was so, overseas.
It was overseas in Europe.
So with that, what was the defining moment for you? Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, defining moments, but God moments to be like, okay, God, this is where I need to be. This is I've got to pack my bags and I've just got to go to overseas since I didn't. Well, I'm not a Laker, but
yeah. Well, for me, Ms. O, this was the thing that really did it for me. Being a realist as I've tried to be all my life.
Yeah,
I knew my skill set, and I said, you know, I'm competing against a top-notch team. Not to say I wouldn't have made the team, but
right.
I had to be a realist. And for a moment there, my coaches had to say, George, let's be a realist now. Look who you're playing against. Look who you're trying to beat out. You weren't a first rounder, so you got to be able to be realistic about it. So my agent suggested, he said, just go overseas for a year and play and see what it's like. And then the Lakers, they retained my rights so I could come back and try it again.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I guess you could say, going back to even Furman, between my freshman year and my sophomore year, I had an injury where I cracked the bone in my fifth metatarsal. You probably hear about cracking a bone in your foot and all that. Well, I broke
my
foot.
Yeah, I was going to say, now I don't even know how to pronounce that booze.
I heard it so much, that's why
you
I can say
you cracked a who and your what?
I can say fifth metatarsal.
Yes, let's say you cracked your foot.
Yeah, that's what I broke my foot. So that's, you know. But it was then that I really had to rely on God. Because, you know, you're on top of the world. And it happened, Miss O, at a time I had just been selected to play for this pre-Olympic team in college. And my dorm mate, but my hall mate was Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan, his buddy, myself, we were like kind of hall mates.
You knew the Michael Jordan?
Yes. Well,
what?
Right now, if he saw me, he'd probably say, okay, George, I remember you, because it's been so long, so I don't want to give anyone any false hopes. But his roommate, Buzz Peterson, and I coached together at Appalachian State prior to me returning to Greenville. So I like to tell people, I knew Michael when he was Michael Jordan, not Michael Air Jordan. You know, there's a difference there.
There's a big difference. Yeah.
So we was, you know, we hung out. And right after I came back, I was up at, of all places, up in North Greenville, college playing, and I went up, came down, cracked my foot. I cracked a bone in my foot, and I had to really connect and rely on God. That was that moment when I knew then that, you know, there's spiritual something that's guiding me, that's got a plan, that's got a path for me. And half that season, I missed about 6 or 7 games, but I came back and finished the season out. But that strengthened my beliefs,
right,
because I knew through him all things are possible. And that was it for me as far as college. Now, going overseas, you know, you think about it. You're going to play in countries
that you've never visited before, and without, because I'm guessing you couldn't take your family or nobody with you.
Well,
right?
You know, conditions were not as bad, and I'll say this because different players had different situations. Myself was single. One of my best friends, his whole family, when he was married, he married when he was out of high school, took his daughters. They both now, because of their time they spent in Europe, they both are so fluent in Spanish. They can speak, I believe, French, and they can speak a little Italian because they've got that worldly experience. So I'm telling you, that was without a doubt one of the best experiences I had in my life. Wow. Looking back, I wish I would have taken more of an advantage of it, which I did take some of an advantage of it, because, you know, I played in Spain, you know, went to France, went to Germany, was able to go to Switzerland. The culture, the food, the clothing, the way people, for the most part, you know, we as Americans are privileged in ways that we don't even think about it. I mean, there's so many things we take for granted. My first years over there where I was playing, my teammates would say, Jorge, that's what they call you in Spanish. When you return,
okay, Jorge.
Yeah, when you return, bring me some jeans, bring me some pantalones, bring me, because it
so
was.
They so they wanted you to bring stuff back from when you.
Yeah, went. Because it was so hard to get those things, import, export. And, you know, mind you, in 84, you're only like 20 years removed from Spain being under a dictatorship. So they were still trying to get accustomed to having some freedoms and liberties that they never had before. Kind of much what we might be going through it now a little bit, but I'll leave that alone. I'll leave that for another conversation, another time. So that really opened my mind up to just how fortunate we as a people we are.
Right.
And, you know, if people had an if they would have an experience to go to Europe and see what it's like to be there, because most people go and they're there and they vacation 2 weeks.
They're tourists. They don't know what it's like to actually live, but you live there.
Yeah, and even the military. I mean, you go to the military, there's a base that's got everything. But I was thrown right into, forced to learn the language. I had to, you know, learn how to drive a stick, you know, to drive the car.
On the wrong side of the road?
Well, no, in Spain it was okay. You was on the right side of the road.
Okay.
But I had my share of accidents nonetheless. I left a few dents in a few cars over there, trust me.
Ooh, Mr. George.
Because they drive like maniacs. And even now, my daughter and my stepdaughter say, Mr. George, you drive a little crazy. I said, that's because
I've seen how you pulled into the parking lot.
Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't going to say nothing. But, Mr. George, with your professional, you know, you play professional basketball. Yeah. You were over there for 11 years. You're now back here. And the thing is that when I met you, it was doing an event for the community, because It was like, you know, God, he looks so familiar, because you can look at people and be like, you know, he looks familiar, but you don't want to say what you think. And so just being able to talk to you and know, you know, this is why you look familiar or where you come from. Being that you play professional basketball, and we know that you've had a but God moment to actually solidify you going over to Europe, and now you back. How has you being a professional basketball player now got you to being involved in the community? to where now, you know, you I've seen you advocate for, you know, people that have played sports, but not just even in sports, just for people in general. I think I walked into your office the other day and I was looking at a posters where you used to do basketball games. Like that brought the community together.
Yeah.
For you, what made you want to come back and be like, okay, let me use what I learned from being a professional basketball player to now being able to do this and transition into doing in the community?
Well, for me, I think it started with my mother. I'd have to believe that. Unfortunately, my father died when I was very young, so I didn't know hardly anything about him. But I know that through my mother, it was just watching her and seeing her and being the blood of her blood. It was just something that became natural. She had a way with people that was sort of magnetic in a way. You know, people would follow her. She was, you know, 6'1" and vociferous and talkative. And she literally would give you the shirt off her back.
Wow.
She would. So growing up with that, and like so many other people, we were in a nice, I'd say, brick home, but we were poor. We really were. We were just making it a lot of times day to day. But she made it work. And that was somehow, you know, filtered in me in some ways. And I'm in my element. You know, Ed Upstate in my center. That I share with Miss Pinson.
That's right. We got to let the people know you're an Upstate Circle of Friends
now.
Right. You done left the basketball alone now.
You're over here doing
the community thing.
Well, and I see so many individuals and families. I see myself in those situations. I can relate to them. It's easy for me because when I say I understand and I know what it's like to wake up and, you know, there's no heat. You wake up and there's no food, and you're trying to. And in the summers, you can't get. There's no air. I mean, it's just a lot of things, and you're struggling. But somehow you make it through the struggle. And if it wasn't for the help of others, of God, and, you know, growing up in a small town, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't have a father, but I had certain men that helped me throughout my life.
Right.
That made sure they would say, "Okay, we're gonna take care of you here."
That's
and I wish
good.
It was more like that today, but
right.
a lot of times they say, you got something, we're going to take care of you, don't do this, don't do that. So it was just easy for me. So when I met Dolores and she was sharing with me what she was wanting to do, and I said, girl, you can do so much more with this place and the community and the surrounding. It more or less found me because I just asked the question with her one day when we had a chance meeting. What did she do? And she said, I own a community center. I was like, go ahead, sister. You own a community center? You got a school? You doing your thing? I said, I would like to come out and talk to you and just see what you have going on. Because I was trying to find, at the time I was at Greenville Tech, after my basketball career, I tell people all the time, the great ones retire, like the Magic Johnsons and Mike, they all retire. Everybody else just quit. I'm retiring. No, your legs are gone. You can't jump. Can't run.
Can't run as fast no more.
Yeah,
ain't no more knees.
You're done.
Yeah.
I knew that after my 11th year or maybe a little before. So I was trying to find something that could benefit me, that could really connect with my strengths, and that was being able to be engaged with people that were like myself, who had their trials and tribulations and knew and at least had I could be in a position to create some hope to say,
that's good.
So you can do this. Let's get through it. So it's been very rewarding. I tell you what, being at that center next year, we'll be celebrating 20 years of just being at that community center. Starting out, I tell people all the time, you know, the hole in the donut was non-existent. We didn't have any of that. And you know from experience, you look out
right
now, you can see the many things that we're doing, have done, will continue to do. And for Dolores and I, it's all about we're in the phase now of putting together a legacy for our children to hopefully carry on and share our dream. We don't know which one is going to be or how they're going to do it, but we'd like to see that happen because there's so many of us that need help from each other.
And I love that. And the thing that the thing that draws me, even, you know, to you when you're talking to you, how you are very professional when speaking. Even I've seen you out in the community talking to people. You have never, because, you know, sometimes, Ms. George, that height on you still can intimidate people, honey.
I know.
You know, we have to remember how tall you are and trying to look up at you, and, you know, but. For you, I was telling, I think it was Mr. Lawrence, I said, he's such a gentle giant to be able
thank you.
To talk to people, yeah. Even, you know, because you do stand at a higher stature. What does that, when you are meeting people where they're at?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. the reality of it, because I'm so accustomed to looking at people, and because of my stature, I have to make sure, especially when it comes to young people, I have to get down on my knees, I have to sit down and be able to look at them eye to eye, because I don't want to be so intimidating.
Right.
And I thank God that the good Lord allowed my mom to bless me with a decent smile and a way so I don't come across. You know, I was at an airport in Europe one time. I think this was toward the end of my career. And, in the airport, they had, on one side of it is a wall of mirrors. I mean, you know, when you're in the atrium there in the middle before you get your ticket and everything.
Yeah.
And people are lining up. And I'm looking across, and I see this wall of mirrors. And I see this one guy that's head and shoulders above everybody else. And I'm like, who is that guy? I'm like, crap, that's me. You know, it's like those moments when you realize how much taller you are than everyone else. And you know, I try to, when I say use it to my advantage, I try to keep the right perspective and understand that, you know, I'm blessed with having this height, but at the same time, I'm just like you and me. You know, we're all the same.
Yeah.
So I try to, you know, I remain just stay humble, just remain who I am. And it comes across, and the intimidation, you know, people actually say, how can you be this nice? I say, see, you didn't know me when I was on that basketball court. It's a whole different.
Well, it was you on a court was probably something different.
Totally. It was a 180. So you had to have a certain demeanor. At least I felt I did, because, you know, the smiles were less. Only time when I talked to a ref or something like that. But other than that, it was all about business. But I do. The ability to relate to people and understand, and when you are able to tell them, say, look, I know where you're coming from.
Yeah. I think that's huge, especially for you to be at Upstate Circle of Friends.
Yes.
In the community. You now are involved.
Yes.
And yes, to be relatable. And I feel that with you, even in our conversations, even dealing with the youth. I've seen you hands-on with the youth.
Yeah.
For you to do that.
It's the journey.
Is that the journey?
Yeah. It's for me. We have a ton of projects going on all the time, and I love the process. I mean, we come up with an idea, but I love going through it, because I said, look, I already know how this is going to turn out.
Yes.
Let's just see how we can really make it something nice. And going through that process of communicating, talking to people, everybody's helping each other, coming together, because, you know, we only have so much time on this planet, and then and that's it. So,
do you feel like your purpose is at Upstate Circle of Friends, helping the community?
Without a doubt, it's God driven. It is God driven, and just to know that. You're a part of making a difference in so many people's lives on a small and then on a larger level. Being a resource, you know, it pleases my heart when people want to utilize our facility. Mm-hmm. Now, some people got to pay, but the majority of people don't, you know, because they want to have family functions to bring people together.
Right.
They want to have weddings to bring people together. They want to have baby showers to bring people together. They want to have dinners, and unfortunately they have a lot of repasses still to bring people together. And that's what it is. So the Upstate Circle of Friends is what it is. And that to me is very gratifying. And one thing that we get a lot of time, people say, I didn't know about this place. Oh my God, they kind of how you were when you was taking back.
Right.
So we just do what we do. And it is very, that to me is the most satisfying aspect of it, is when people come together, you're in harmony, you're in one accord, and you can come in peace, you leave in love, and just a fulfillment of saying, we were able to just be able to fellowship, be it, you know, recognition, remembrance, or just celebration. So that's the probably biggest satisfaction.
And I love that. I love how, you know, you make sure that we do come together, we're celebrated.
Yes.
And I think with, you know, where your background comes from you being, you know, going from just playing basketball in high school to now you're overseas playing professional for 11 years, bringing that back with you into the community to say, hey, I was, you know, full of dreams, full of hopes and grace. I know you can do it. And I think that younger people need that.
Yes.
Not even younger people, Ms. Georgia. I needed that. When I came to Upstate Circle of Friends, I needed that. So being able to hear your story of where you come from, to know that you know, God, your faith, and that you're still going. Well, even after your legs and your foot said, no more basketball.
Yeah.
It was like,
you got to keep going.
You got to keep going. So I am grateful for you that you came and you shared your story with me, and that you're at Upstate Circle of Friends. So if someone wants to come and be a part of Upstate Circle of Friends, can you tell us where we can find you to come and talk with you more?
Sure. You know, you can go to our website at info@ucfgreenville.org. We're trying to constantly upgrade it because there's volunteer opportunities. And, of course, you know, we've got 14 different type programs. I like to tell people, Ms. O, from 2 to 92, we got something for you.
Come on, I love
it. From 2 to 92, we got the youth program, we got teen program, we got career programs. We have senior programs. Of course, we're feeding, providing the meals. You know about all of that. We've got, of course, the garden that's catered, really, to give everything that we grow away. We've got a mental health component. We got a medical wing where we provide medical services, just like MD360.
Yes.
We've got opportunities for people who are interested in nursing, becoming CNA, even med tech. We have, of course, provide senior care services, even a Drive Smart Academy where you can come and learn how to get your permit, get your driver's license, go down to DMV, take a picture, you got it. Gosh, we got the veterans program. We're really happy about being in a position to help veterans in getting some of the claims that they need to have in order to fulfill their lives. And I must say this, I'd be remiss without talking about some of our local leaders that have been there with us every step of the way. We know that Michelle Caldwell, the school district, is doing everything she can to advocate because we're in a Title I district.
Right.
So our kids, we're at a disadvantage there. She does a great job. And of course, my good friend, Councilman Fan, oh my God, he has been phenomenal in just trying to make sure that we have everything we can have. And he's the voice of District 25 in a lot of ways. And then my good friend, Mr. Wendell Jones, he's down there fighting the good fight in Columbia. You know, he's just doing it. But with those three, and of course, shout out to Ms. Robinson, and I will not forget Ms. Chandra Dillard. She too is in Columbia.
And we can't forget the CEO of it all, Mr. Lawrence Pinson.
Oh, and I was going to say that, Mr. Lawrence Pinson. It was her vision. I tell people this all the time. They see me coming a mile away because, as you mentioned, I'm almost 7 feet tall. But this was her vision.
Right.
It started with her, who has a special needs son and who for 10 years made sure that not only her son, but
others,
up to 20 was able, and her vision was that whole entire facility, close to 40,000 square feet.
Right.
But that was her vision. And we've expanded on that. But it was her idea. And I just come along for the ride.
And we are so grateful for both of you that you guys are still in the community.
We're still
you're
there,
making a difference, celebrating 19 years this year, 20 years next year.
Yep.
If you guys want to come and be a part and help out, we want you guys to come in, tune in. As he gave you, the website again is Upstate Circle of Friends.
That's right. Info at Upstate Circle, UCFGreenville.org. Just Google Upstate and we'll pop up right there.
And Mr. George, come talk to y'all kids too.
He can tell. Don't have a problem.
Yeah, he willing to come and talk to your children.
Yeah.
So be sure to follow him. And we want to thank you all so much for tuning in. Mr. George, I want to thank you so much personally for coming, hanging out with me on the G-Raise Grace with the lovely Big O.
Thank you for having me. And we'd love to come back. Just let us know.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, I'm calling all G-Racers out. If you want to be a guest on the G-Race Show with the lovely Big O, send me your story right now at lovelybigo@96.3theblock.com. Or you can go on Facebook under G-Race. That's right, it's G-Race on Facebook. And send your story if you want to be a guest on the G-Race with the lovely Big O.